Let's rock.
Alright, this is Speaking Educationally with Doug, Dina, and Gerard.
Where I'm coming from.
15 years into education now, you know, what can I do to create this equitable space? I'm like, you know, what...
And especially for those students that look like me and that came from my community, I wanted to be an influencer for them, like for young people.
Connect with more people whose mindset and goals.
Alright, this is Speaking Educationally with Doug, Dina, and Gerard.
Alright, y'all, this is episode 16. We have a special guest tonight who is definitely dear to my heart. But before we get to that, Dina and Gerard, you guys got anything going on you want to brag about?
I made some really awesome keto granola. So I am just telling you, it was so good. And so, yeah, I'm very proud of myself. So I have been able to maintain keto for, it's been 2 months now.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's awesome. I'm feeling really good. I have my checkup with my doctor tomorrow, so I'll see how my blood work looks, but, so far so good.
That's cool. Gerard, what do you got?
For me, just exercising, being able to stay on an exercise regimen every day, as well as the family walks, just enjoying life. I can't complain at all.
Yeah. And at some point, we should talk about the 100-man march real quick, because I don't think we talked about that, have we?
No, we haven't.
Do you want to mention that at some point, or maybe we should talk about that at the end of the show?
Yeah, we can talk about that, most definitely.
All right, let's talk about it at the end. All right, because... we have a special guest. I'm going to get to him. My thing is this. I had a great bike ride with my son. We went through Kennett Square, and we did like street, like up and down the sidewalks. It wasn't like a path. It was like we were like biking through the city. It was fun.
Nice. And,
yeah, if my wife hears this, tell her that never happened, but we definitely had some fun. Anyway, in all seriousness, it did happen, but don't tell my wife. Chaz is with us tonight, and I'm not going to introduce him because he has, I know, a story that he wants to tell, but Chaz and I have known each other for quite some time, went to college together, we were roommates for a year together, I hold him dear to my heart, and I invited him onto the show because he's got a story, and he's an awesome educator. So Chaz, tell us about who you are.
Hi, everybody. First of all, I want to say thank you for having me.
No problem.
But also, before I start, Doug, did you and your son have helmets on? That's what your wife's going to know.
Yes. No, we did. We did. No, we had helmets. We had helmets. Absolutely.
All right. My name is Chaz. I'm an educator in Central Pennsylvania. I've been working within education and within special ed specifically for about 20 years. And I hope to share some things about my upbringing and my experience in education and as we talk tonight. Thank you.
So, yeah, and you work in what they call the intermediate unit, right? So can you explain to the people from, because a lot of our listeners are from Delaware, like what's the intermediate unit?
Yeah, so an intermediate unit, Pennsylvania has multiple intermediate units and they're all sectioned off depending on county. Intermediate units are kind of an independent educational consulting company that school districts can reach out and contract specific services for us, whether it be speech and language, vision, hearing, behavior, autism, mental health, and also different curriculum kind of things and training. So we get contracted out by districts. So I work in what's called IU-15, which is Dauphin County, Cumberland County, and Perry County. And I work specifically in behavior, in our behavior consortium classes and center-based programs.
That's cool. So you also mentioned, so I know you worked with kids on the spectrum for a long time, and that's kind of been your passion for a lot.
Yeah.
Is that still your passion, or are you looking to do other things?
Yeah, you're right, Doug. So I was in special ed for years, but I really, really got into behavior when I started working at a place called the Vista School, which is a private school for individuals with autism in Hershey, Pennsylvania. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And within autism, I kind of how do I say, I got kind of moved on, where the knowledge of behavior was kind of missing in other areas of in our program. So I was asked to do more within those other communities that I service. And as of right now, they were able to bring on. So I was handling autism plus all these other programs that I mentioned, but we were able to hire two more behavior analysts to come in and help just specifically with autism, allow me to focus on other things. So I still support autism, but not to the level I was before.
Yeah. And I know, Gerard, and you were talking the pregame about how he has noticed people say things that, you know, the BCBAs, the ones that are trained to be BCBAs, the ones that are working with behaviors in PA are really, you know, at the front line, at least in this area, regionally.
And that's really cool to hear. Go ahead, Gerard.
Oh, no, I was just saying absolutely, because the BCBA that I work with, I've learned a lot from her and been able to, and she's from Pennsylvania, originally Chester, and I've been able to learn a lot from her, and I've been able to run some strategies by her that I've used, and she's been able to tell me you might want to tweak this, and it's just not for, you know, the students with autism, just a wide range of behaviors, which she's been able to give me some pointers on.
Yeah. So within behavior, I think a lot of people have really tried to narrow it down into one specific discipline or area within education. And really, it's some of my, even my wife's a BCBA also, and you know, we're hiring at this point, trying to get BCBAs to help support regular ed situations, just because behavior is so important across the board. Why not reach them in a natural environment versus a more secluded or isolated situation?
That's good. So, Chaz, the other thing that we wanted to talk to you about besides like who you are is where did you come from? And I know you came from your mom and your dad. but beyond that, like what is your story? Because I think when it comes to equity, I think our conversation, and I think where Dina and Gerard and I can definitely jump in and ask questions, is your story, I think, is a little bit different than the three of ours, and that makes it awesome to kind of compare notes. So who are you? Where did you come from?
So, go for it, man. So like I said, right now I live really close to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is the state capital of Pennsylvania. Both of my parents graduated from one of the high schools here in Harrisburg. But after that, they both settled after college. They both settled in a place called Sealands Grove, Pennsylvania, which is an hour north of here. And it's really, really in the center of the state and some really country Appalachian area. From there, you know, at that time, again, I'm not to say my age, but I'm an 80s kind of kid. You know, I came up in grade school in the 80s in central Pennsylvania, predominantly white, you know, community. And when I say predominantly white, I was the only black or African-American in my class of 200 and small classes of 200. And my 200 was the largest class that's come through at that time.
Were there any females that are African-American or no?
Doug, I don't know if you heard what I just said. The other two, there were two female African Americans in Sealands Grove. That was my mother and my sister.
Okay, and I know your sister.
Yes, you do. Mine and my sister. Yes, you do. So,
all right, go ahead.
Yeah, and then from there, from Sealands Grove, I came through Sealands Grove. I was blessed to have one of my best friends kind of move into the area. We weren't best friends before. But as soon as he moved into the area and he was walking down the street, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's someone that looks like me. Let's go find out what his name is. And we are best friends, to this day. Doug knows him as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm not going to mention his name, but so before he shows up, was it anxiety. Like, I mean, I can only imagine, because I remember the place we went to in Harrisburg that you brought me that one time, and mm-hmm. it was a little bit late. And I was like, wow, I was a little bit anxious. You know what I mean? Like, I knew I wasn't because it was cool, but.
Yeah.
Is that.
It was the only thing I knew, really. So I'll say that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. By anxious, I don't know. I think I was again blessed to have both parents living in my household, and I got so much love and guidance from them in that arena that, you know, every time walking out of the house, I was getting that conversation about, you know, be safe, you know, maybe, you know, people are watching, you know, don't do anything stupid to get yourself in trouble, you know, watch your back. You know, all those kind of things that just to keep myself safe. And the point where my dad specifically athletically was like, you know, some people aren't going to like you, but if they want to win, they're going to want you on their team. You're going to have to play. So, mm-hmm. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's interesting. All right. So going through high school, I know you probably don't want to talk about college, and I totally respect that. But from that point on, moving forward, how has that transition been from being a kid who, and you said this to me before, you were kind of almost like the token black guy, obviously, and therefore protected in a way. Like, you were protected in a way, but you still knew within the community there was a lot of racist views. So,
yeah, for sure. And that really came out when my new friend just showed up. And that's when I really saw that difference. So he showed up in like summer of seventh grade going into eighth grade.
Okay.
So when he showed up, we'll just call him Bubba. Okay.
I gotta get one of those hats for real.
Call him Bubba.
Call him Bubba.
When Bubba showed up, it was very clear that I was treated differently than he was, because they knew who I was. They've been around them for more of the time. So to see the discrepancy between how people treated me versus how they treated my new very good friend was more. I knew it was always there, but to the extent of which it was there wasn't clear to me till then.
But you and Bubba are also different people.
Completely different. Yeah. But they didn't know that. You know, the people at that time didn't know mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Of course we are. Yeah. And then also on top of me living where I lived, like I said, my parents grew up an hour away. So I was down in Harrisburg in the city with my family every weekend, including going to church on Sunday and then leaving from church to go back up the Seons group. So it's not like I didn't know what was out there. Like, I didn't just grow up in that central PA, you know, bubble. I knew what was going on in the rest, you know, just an hour away from me. And living with my family in very different conditions than where I lived up there, and staying with them and doing what we did. And, you know, to go back and forth every week until I started playing sports competitively, you know, that really kind of dictated my schedule. You know, I got to see a really different part of like an hour away from me, you know?
Yeah. So Dina or Gerard, do you guys have any questions for Chaz at this point?
I'm kind of curious what got you interested in, you know, working with special needs students.
Well, that takes me to one of my favorite answers. My mom. So my mom was a special ed teacher and was my school district supervisor. So my mom was a special ed supervisor in this small school district. Wow. My mom was, she's very light skinned.
Awesome.
Yeah, she is awesome.
She is awesome.
She's lighter skinned than I. You know, I don't know if she got a pass. People didn't know how to take her really back in the day. We had an African American black female as a special ed director in the 80s.
Wow.
So I grew up in that system. I knew what all those acronyms meant, from IEP to SLP to RR to, like, I knew all that you know, growing up, and I was volunteering in a lot of her classrooms, just because I need to get my ass out of class, go do something else. So I got to help and go on field trips, you know, help kids, you know, tutor. I got to help do a lot of different things, just walking down the hallway and not sitting in a study hall, you know?
Right.
So, and that's how I got in, into special ed. And then as I graduated college, you know, as soon as someone heard I had any kind of experience or knowledge in special ed, all of a sudden I'm the autism specialist, you know, like, cause there wasn't, they didn't have that, you know?
All right.
So, and I just kind of went from there.
That's cool.
Wow.
All right. Jerome, you got any more questions or anything?
Nah, Dina, that's what I was wondering. And that was great to hear, especially considering, so basically your mom was a trailblazer.
Oh, yeah. And to see her, see how strong she was in that time. And even looking back, I mean, I just knew my mom was just, she's a bad woman. You know what I mean? I knew that growing up, but, to really reflect back and look back and see what she was dealing with on top of everything else, was pretty amazing. And both right now, both me and my sister both work in special ed. My sister works in the Philly School District, North Philly.
Oh, wow.
Special ed, elementary ed, dual cert.
So, and she was one hell of a soccer player.
Yes, she was.
Wow. We're going to have to get her on too.
Yeah, for sure. Her stories will blow you away.
She called
me. Oh my gosh, yes. Talking like 14th and Diamond? Come on, man. North Philly?
That's what I was like. North Philly, black woman, and was playing soccer? Oh yeah, definitely want to talk to her.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chaz, I'm sure you have her number, so I'll be reaching out after the show. Get her on.
I'll hook you guys up. Honestly, growing up, her story's a lot different than mine, you know? So,
really?
Oh, yeah, because she was always, like, living in my shadow.
So oh, kinda, I can see that.
You know, between casting a big shadow between mom and myself, like...
And she's, what, 5 years younger than you, right?
She's just over 4. So we were transitioning schools each time. When I was leaving middle school, she was coming in.
But your super senior year, she was there, right?
You mean in college? Yeah, thanks.
Yeah,
Dad. Yeah, the extra, yeah, the extra semester I did. Yeah, we were in school at the same time.
I said, all right. Moving on. That was that
red shirt that I got for my health issues that I'm currently dealing with. By the way.
No, I will say this for the record, Chaz and I communicated better on defense than anyone I ever played with. For some reason, we had an ability to say, like, he knew he had my back as many times as I had his back, and I know that's for certain. So,
for sure,
I'm gonna put that out there, Chaz. So,
thank you, Doug. Yeah. I appreciate it. Love you.
Yeah, too. We play defense together, and that's playing defense together is something you can never. Can't teach it. You just have to experience it. But anyway, and I digress.
Doug, everybody loves the goal scorers. We just get passed over, right?
I know.
Everybody wants to be the hero, scoring goals and scoring touchdowns. It's about defense sometimes.
Chaz, I think we made, between you and me, we made defense sexy again, I think. Yeah.
Pull up some video. I got to see. I got to see that.
Doug, how many shutouts do you have?
What's that?
How many shutouts did we have?
Total?
What's your record?
I think I'm at like 32, but we had the most consecutive, well, at least up until 2 years ago, most consecutive shutouts ever in E-Town history.
Yep.
Yeah, wow. 10. Or 10 or 11, yeah. 10 or 11 consecutive shutouts.
So, Chaz, I just need to tell you that there is very little about sports that I really truly understand, although I like watching sports, but I really couldn't tell you what anything means. Yeah. And this weekend, Doug and Gerard were throwing all of these sports analogies back and forth. And I'm sitting there, like, either listening or reading, like, the Voxes. And I felt like, you know, on SNL when they do anything with Eric Trump.
Yeah.
Where he's like, I don't get it. So that's me. And I'm like, you know, it's great that they're going back and forth about this. And thank God for context clues, because outside of that, I have no idea what's going on.
That's funny.
You might not get this reference, but Gerard would. I was as a defender, I was more the shutdown corner.
Oh.
I didn't get that. You didn't. Please explain. So we always have this term. It's called ask a black man.
Okay.
So
yeah, so, I got it. Hey, I'm familiar.
Hey Doug, I'll expound on it. Just think, right, Richard. Just think, Richard Sherman.
Okay, yeah, I got Richard Sherman. All right. Yeah, that's
ain't nothing getting past that brother on the outside on that defense. No.
And Chaz was that guy.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I kind of get that because I do watch hockey, so I kind of get that. Yep. So okay.
And but then like the how Darrell Revis runs.
Darrell Revis, Deion Sanders.
Ooh, prime time.
Gerard, that takes me back to high school. Gerard, I played football and soccer in the same state, and they called me prime time.
Wow, how'd you pull that off?
Man, I did.
He was a black guy. He was fast. Chaz, I'm telling you, Chaz is the second fastest guy I've ever met next to Rohrbach.
Our other roommate, but yeah.
I'm just kidding. And Roblox's not faster than you. You're faster than
him. I tell you what, like, I'm a football guy, and my son, he's 7, and he really won't get into football, but his sports right now are soccer and basketball, and actually, he likes soccer the best, so it's like, I told my wife, I was like, hey, I'm a football guy, but if this is what he wants to do, I'm going to support him, and like, I'm all into it. Like, I'm trying to turn on international soccer games and have him sit down, and like, I'm just all in it now.
That's great. That's great to hear.
That is cool. Well, the best thing, Gerard, about soccer is you know how long it's going to be. It's not a swimming meet where it could be 5 hours. It's going to be 90 minutes, right? So that's the first part. You know it's going to end. The second part is your son, if he's playing, is at least walking around or running or doing something the entire time, and you can watch them actively doing something.
Yeah.
Like basketball is the same way. But baseball, you sit on the bench for half the game.
And with my son's motor, like, I think that's why soccer kind of gravitated towards me. Like, we didn't realize really that he was good at it. Like, we just didn't, like, I'm like, okay, he needs to do a sport every season because he's too high energy. And it was funny. And Doug, you're going to laugh at this. And I know Chaz is. Like, after his first rec game, the other coach, like, as we were leaving the complex at DE Turf, the other coach and some of the parents was walking by me and my wife and was like, good game. It was like, and the coach said, every time your son came near the ball, we were scared because, like, he was big. He was kind of big for 6, they, like, compared to some of the other kids. And it's like they were, like, white parents and white coaches were, like, bragging on him. And I'm like, honey, I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about because, like, I'm not a soccer dude, but I guess he's got something in him if they're saying it. And then the coaches wouldn't take him out, and I'm like, I'm just like, he's really not a. I'm like, okay, I'm like, maybe this is his thing. But because the coach was like, every time he got near the ball, he's like, his foot, wow, like, he has so much power, and he has a perfect spin and turn on the ball, how he cuts a corner, and like, he was throwing out terminology, and I'm like, I don't really know the game, so we're just saying thank you.
And for that, one moment, Gerard was like, and then I knew how Dina felt. I don't get it.
Yeah, I did not get it.
That is so funny. That is so funny. See?
You're going to learn, though, aren't you, for your son, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I've went and got, you know, some cones, and I'm trying to look up drills and trying to keep them active with doing it. And
good.
All you got to do, just YouTube Messi.
Okay.
Messi, just Messi. If he can be Messi, I don't know. Your son's bigger. He might want to be Ronaldo. I don't know. But, yeah.
YouTube. I do like Ronaldo. I watched him a little bit on the World Cup.
Yeah,
he's good.
In any case, though, and I'll say this for all, like, youth sports, because I'm also a coach.
Yeah, let's talk about soccer for a second after you're done and what you're doing with soccer, because that's a cool thing. But go ahead.
Yeah. So for with any youth sport, it's just letting the kids have fun. Like, too many times the parents and coaches just get so, like, amped up and they forget it's fun and they think it's the World Cup. As long as the kids are having fun and learning. And not just learning about the game, but respect and what it's like as a team. Like, those are the important things. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it all definitely translates out to, you know, how they handle things in their life. I've had a lot of students tell me that the reason they're so open and receptive to criticism is because they're athletes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you either, if you have a desire to be a better athlete, you have to open yourself up to criticism that's going to make you better.
Yeah.
And so it'll definitely translate out to, you know, other parts of his life.
True.
That's a really interesting point.
One good thing I love the fact, like, he's done a couple clinics and he's done two rec leagues, but of course the second one got cut short because of COVID. But both times he's been the only black kid on his team, which is good, because to me, he gets to be around other kids that he really doesn't know, other than the coach's daughter and him is in the Chinese immersion program together. So like, they're like real good buds, but like, we're the only black parents. So some of the other parents, we're probably the only black family they have interactions with. And it's been amazing to see how they gravitated towards us, because it's like, now they actually get interactions with a black family and they're like, oh, wow. And because like the coach's husband, like me and him, he like works for the police department. Like me and him are like tight. Like he sees me coming, he meets me in the parking lot and starts up a conversation.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's good.
All of a sudden things change
that quick. Yep. So we're changing the world one parent at a time.
Hey, that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
Yep.
I don't know. Okay. I'm going to move on. Never mind. I'm going to get a little deep.
Do it, Doug.
No. So, like.
It never stopped you before.
Yeah, right?
I know. And Chaz has heard this too, but I can't get away from this whiteness. Like, this white idea that now all of a sudden we need to meet you halfway in a parking lot and say, hey,
oh, no, this was before all this.
I know, and I'm not calling that person out. I'm not calling anybody out. But it's just like, why can't it just be like, for example, I do the same thing, but for reasons to make sure that everybody is feeling comfortable in the situation, wherever it is. Like, right, if you're the only black family, I am probably going to come up to you and smile and wave and give you a handshake and do whatever, especially if I don't know you, like at a dance recital, right? But it isn't awkward, right? It's not gotcha. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh my gosh, you're my black friend. Hey, what's up? Like, let's all party. Like, it's like, yo, I got to go up, but I'm like, yo, bro, what's up? And it's like, you know, I kind of give them that look. Like, so I'm saying that. I always come back to this. We need a secret handshake to be like, if you need me, I'm going to be sitting over here in row three. Whenever you need it, call me over. I will intervene with whatever issues we got going on. But, I mean, you're my boy, but you're my boy because you're human, not because I know you and or I'm trying to show something off. Like, oh, it's my black friend. Like, let's just be cool. I may or may not like you, but that's not the issue. The issue is just, let's just be cool with it. Like, and then let's move on. Like, and that's such a white
issue
right now.
But Doug, really quick.
I know.
Nobody.
Go ahead. Nobody thinks that
for most of the black or African.
What's that?
For most of the black or African American people, though, they don't know the intentions of what people are coming to them in that context. Though we're always on the defensive. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So we can't necessarily say or filter out, you know, what you're feeling, because we're always on the defense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of keeping things at bay. And I can't say we. I should. That's more me myself. But you know,
that's a good point, though. So
I know you. I know that's you. But yeah. Someone that's standing next to me might not feel that because they don't know you like I know you. You know.
Right. So
they might
interpret
that differently, is what I'm saying.
So if someone came up to you the way that I just described, you might be that you didn't know. You might be like, "What the f is their intention?" I think we lost Jazz.
Yes, and
well, me no. I'm kind of like dead to that right now.
I'm sorry, Chad. You lost.
I'm kind of numb to that right now. You know, okay. Me personally, because I've lived that life. You know.
Yeah.
Did I press mute or something?
I don't know what you're doing.
You might have been muted.
It's all right. You said you're kind of dead to that life right now.
I'll try and figure this out. I have no idea.
Just stop touching buttons.
I'm kind of numb to that. I'm saying is that like when someone approaches me, I just assume I'm a blank slate. I'm trying to take in new information. I'm trying not to be judgy at the same time, be defensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I know for like me with this one parent, like I know that he's coming from a different place where he's just.
I was just saying, hold on, Chaz.
Okay. Go ahead. Yeah. With him, like it's not like that. But with others, there definitely is.
Just a feeling.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, I'm sure.
Well, and I mean, my thought with that too is that, you know, that's some, there's got to be some days where you're like, I just can't deal with this today. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's mm-hmm. just, I can't, because it's, you know, that sucks up a lot of space, like in your brain, that sucks up a lot of processing space. And it's like, you know, having to constantly navigate. And I mean, I've been in toxic work situations before where I know that there are certain people that it's just, I don't have the emotional bandwidth to be able to deal with this individual today. And so like, if I see them kind of coming toward me, I'm looking for how could I get out of this? You know, cause I just, I know this is going to suck up any bit of energy I have to deal with. And it's like, so even on a much, you know, even on any level at all, having to navigate that out, that's gotta, you know, there are just some days where I can imagine it's gotta be draining.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Dean, because I don't know. Can you guys hear me now? I switched up.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, you're good.
I've told Doug this a couple different times. Like when that point you're talking about, my internal monologue is I'm just tired of teaching white people about white people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's not funny. That's not funny, but yes, we've talked about this. That's not funny.
Yeah.
I mean, that's some bullshit.
I can't, like, at some point, especially now, I'm just kind of, I'm over it. I can get myself out of that conversation or situation, but like you said, I know it's coming, I'm out. I can't deal with it right now. Right.
And nor should you have to, and we've discussed this before on the show, where it's just, it's not, you know, it's not a black person, an indigenous person, a person of color's job to teach white people how to be better people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, their own history.
Yes. Yes. The responsibility shouldn't fall to, you know, however you identify black person of color, however you identify with that. It shouldn't fall to that. But it's like, I constantly feel like that is what happens. And, you know, one of the things that I had a discussion with recently with one of my friends is that she's now experiencing, because she has been a lot more vocal about, you know, not putting up with racism and calling people out on their racist views. She's now experiencing like this drain, you know, and she's like, mm-hmm. She's like, I'm emotionally drained. She's like, I've had family members cut me off. She's like, I'm at a point where like,
she's white.
Yeah. And she's like, she said, I know I'm doing the right thing. And she's like, I've lost friends and family members the past 2 weeks. And she said, and that's difficult. She did have an upside where her dad promised her today he wasn't going to cut her off. So
that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So she hasn't lost her dad, but that's been, and I told her, I said, you know, I know it's difficult, but this is not your lesson to learn. You know, it's like, it's, you know, I look at everything as, you know, as a blessing or a lesson. And this is not, I was like, this is not your lesson to learn. And I said, it's theirs. And if they can't accept you standing up for what it means to be a good human being, then they don't deserve you in their life. Like, that's just how that goes. And I said, it doesn't make it easier. And I said, but it's draining. And this is for a white person. You know, she's having a difficult time with that. So what I can imagine is for anybody who has to come across that, you know, and it's not, for some people, it's not daily, but for anybody that has to deal with that, that doesn't really leave you, you know, when you do, you don't have the option to shut it off, and nor do you have the ability to control when it's going to occur in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Sometimes it's very spontaneous based on an experience you just had in that moment and you don't know how to react.
You know the crazy thing though, what your friend is experiencing, imagine us black folks experiencing it every day when we're outnumbered in the professional workplace setting. Like it gets to the point, it's like, are you that afraid or intimidated of my presence?
Right.
Like, wow.
It's just, and you know what's funny, because I think I've thought of this before, I just never really brought it up. When I was in elementary school and I was like, you know, growing up, I didn't fit in with other kids really well. And like socializing was a very difficult thing for me. And like the kids that I always made friends with first were all black. Like it seemed to be that they were the ones who were just accepting of me no matter what. So when I started working as a teacher, I guess that's the reason why I was like, find a black person, because they seem to be better. Like, you know, they know what's going on. They're knowledgeable. Like, they're not going to make you feel bad about your existence. You know, it's like, they just are, you know, they're just great. You know, it's like, I've always had positive experiences with black people. So I'm like, it's hard to understand how somebody just automatically, innately is like, I need to be fearful of you because you're black. Like, it's hard for me to understand that.
Sorry. Yeah, I would just say, I think it has to do with your experiences. Like, you experienced positive relationships with black people as a young person. I think that has a lot to go. But, and I totally think that that's a lot to do with how you became who you are, Dina. But I'm just going to say something. I'm going to veer off a little bit for a second here and just say that I think one of the things as a white person that I'm thinking right now is that I haven't had contact with every single white person that I talked to in the past 3 months, right? And I'm kind of waiting for that first interaction with some people that Chaz, you and I both know. And then there's going to be some canceled people, and or I might try to bring them in and have a conversation. But until they're ready, I don't know that I'm ready until you do a little bit of the work. And that's kind of what I'm promoting right now. Like, as a friend to white people, as a family member to white people, like, I'm down with you as long as you're willing to grow on your own without me having to shove a resource down your neck. Like, mm-hmm. You come at me with something and you give me some knowledge as a white person, like, because you know where I'm at right now, right? I'm staying in here. You need to come meet me where I'm at. And if you can't meet me where I'm at, then I'm kind of done with you. And I mean that for family and friends. And I put that out there on multiple platforms and I'm cool with it. And I think I'm going to have some people drop off, and that's all right. I'm going to still reach out to them at times, but because I don't want to give up on any white people, because I think all of us can be saved, but I don't know. It's kind of where I'm at.
You say saved, but I think it's
whatever. More, true.
I think everybody's got I look at it the same as education, right? Everybody's learning style is different. Mm-hmm. Everybody learns at a different rate. Everybody learns from a different style, from different resources. We can't expect everybody to learn this new thing that's been out there forever, but at the same time, they're not accepting to it yet. You know,
right.
They need some time to wrap their head around it, see it around them a little bit, like experience it on their own level to be able to get to that same place maybe the rest of us are trying to be. You know?
So Chaz, you know me on a deeper level than Dina and Gerard. Yeah. I'm talking about my friendships, my family, that circle, not professionally. Professionally, I got to work with everybody. I'm a principal of a school.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from. I'm going to work with you because you're employed by the Colonials. I can't say it on this podcast, but I am employing people and I'm working with them, right?
So just remember, Doug, that's 38 minutes in. You want to go?
Yeah. 38:49.
Anyway, my point is, I'm talking about the people that have no influence over my financial well-being. Like, that's my line in the sand. Come meet me or you're out. And I can do that to those people because they don't have any influence over me other than my influence over our relationship. You know what I mean? Like, so Chaz, you know me too. If you know me like that, like, I am a really good friend and a really good family member. If you don't, then either meet me where I'm at or I'm done. Mm. I don't know. That's kind of where I'm coming from, but I'm done.
And that's what I said to you before, because we talked about this. I'm like, are you done or are you putting them on pause? Because
Pause. You're right.
Because allow them to catch up. That's all I'm at. That's all.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
It can be difficult to, when you're dealing with white people who are not in that same like space, it can be very difficult and frustrating because you're like, why don't you get it? You know, like it's so easy to lose patience. But, you know, when somebody is willing to have the conversation, I think we kind of touched on this last week a little bit. You know, if a parent made an effort to come to me and say, I have an issue with this thing you did in the classroom with the students, then I need to be open and receptive to what that parent has to say, because they came directly to me and they wanted to have the dialogue and the conversation. Anybody who is willing to have the dialogue and the conversation, I have some respect for that, because they're at least somewhat willing to talk about it versus the person who wants to just like sit in their privilege and in their racist views and not be willing to stretch further and understand that their perspective is not the only one.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm just to the point, like with, especially professionally, with my white counterparts, just know that, as some of them have already seen, just know that from here on out, it's a level of accountability that has to be had. And we're going to have a lot of, you know, professional growth conversations. For example, if I see 10 teacher openings and out of the 10 teachers you hired, none of them was of color, we're going to have a conversation. If as an administrator, if I see your grade book looking like this, and every time I turn around, out of your 30 kids, the 5 that are struggling are always the Black kids, or every time RTI conversations come up, the kids that you mentioned that you may be leaning for recommendation of testing and IEPs and whatever are Black, we're going to have those conversations. I just want everybody to know that from the Black community and education, there's a level of accountability that's going to be started by the work and the conversation. So it's nothing personal or us making it about race, but at the same time, we're all making it about race because we want you to see that these racial and biased views will not be tolerated any longer.
Yeah, I would completely agree, and I hope after we come back from this closure, COVID, you know, get back to this in-person kind of instruction, you know, like, and I don't know about you three, but just because we call a meeting doesn't mean any communication is happening.
Right.
Right. You know, true. Like, so, yeah, you can call me up and we can sit in the room together, but if one of us isn't going to listen, is there really anything accomplished there? You know, so...
No.
And true. So, and I feel like you do, Dre. Like if you're going to call me in, I'm going to have a conversation with you. I'm going to ask questions and look for legitimate answers. If I don't get the answers that I think are appropriate, we're going to have a different kind of conversation. So, and it's going to look very different at that point. How you need to change, and me as a behaviorist, how you as a professional need to change your behavior. You know what I mean? I'm not.
You're on point.
And to piggyback off of Chaz, no longer will, and this goes for other, you know, other professions outside of education as well, human resource departments, especially in education, no longer can you be able to say, well, we leave the hiring decisions up to the buildings. No, we're not going for that anymore. If you don't have enough diversity in that building to put on interview panels, you need to start asking for some diversity that may be in other buildings to volunteer their time to be on some interview panels in other buildings. Because I can tell you, if you ask some Black folks, some Black teachers at one building, since another building doesn't have diversity, if they would mind volunteering for some interview panels, I'm telling you, most of them are going to jump at the opportunity because they know that their voice now is needed.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's great. That's a great point. That's a great point. All right. We are 44 minutes in. Chaz, wow. It has been fun, my friend. We need to go about an hour. We're in the lounge. We've already had a lot of fun. We've already joked a lot. We've already done whatever. Is there anything, any sort of story that you have, because we talked about this pregame, yeah, where you were, because we're going to get to your message, but I think you've already talked about your message a lot. So maybe a story of something that happened that you were called in as a Black male where you're like the hairs in the back of your neck came up and you got your Spidey sense in. I know you're in the Spider-Man and all the Marvel comics.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't stand it. Go ahead.
So, I mean, there's a couple that I can think of. in one, on a, as a general sense, I don't like to be used as a threatening consequence to student behavior or staff behavior. Like, don't make me call Mr. Chaz in here. Like, I hate that. So, you know, as a general stance, like when I, you know, and we know the kind of students we're talking about, if I go in there and I ask the questions, is the kid safe? Is it being respectful? Is it being disruptive? Then don't call me in here. Don't call me in here. We'll have a meet. We can talk at the end of the day. But if he's not, I mean, if he's just being, if he's refusing to do work, don't use me as a threat to come in here and say, I'm going to sit with him or her. You know what I mean? That's a very general story, but that happens regularly.
All right. So if I'm a white girl and I'm asking you this question, why is that wrong? Why is it wrong to call the black male in? It's a kid of your color. It's a black kid that's sitting there not listening to me as a white female. Like, why is that wrong?
Mm-hmm. Why is that wrong? Number one, it's an empty threat. Regardless of color, it's an empty threat behavior. Like, you don't know what this person is going to come in and do. Like, you don't know if I can, like I do now, I can refuse to come in. So you're using, like, it's an empty threat. And all of a sudden, now you look really stupid because I'm not going to come in and do your teaching for you because I'm not here to teach. I'm here to work with behavior. If you can't, like, I've had conversations where, well, the kid won't come to my table. Okay, well, specifically autism. Well, okay, I've done the behavior shaping to get a kid to the table. Now you can't teach him. That's not my fault.
Right.
It's you as a teacher. We worked on the behavior that was an issue. A kid's calling out. I teach him how to raise his hand, ask a question. If you can't answer his question or her question, and you know they're asking respectfully, they're getting attention respectfully, and you can't deal with it and annoys you, that's on you.
Right.
Not the student.
Because you're also the adult to that teacher. You're the adult in the room who should have built that relationship in order to do my suggestions to you would have helped you if you had already built the backbone of a relationship with that child, but you haven't. So you're kind of I'm lost at you now.
Everything's about building relationship and behavior. We call it pairing, you know, getting to know someone or an individual, pairing yourself or connecting yourself with like things that individual likes. Whether it be, you know, candy, whether it be, you know, all of a sudden now I'm learning and watching all this anime because the kids are in anime. So I have to know what they're talking about so I can relate. You know, or video games or whatever sports, whatever it is, you're pairing yourself with that thing that you can connect with. Some teachers, some educators don't bother to even try and cross that bridge of learning what those other kids like.
Right. That's true. And it seems so incredibly disrespectful because, I mean, you are a degreed professional, you know, you have worked hard to get where you are and, you know, have the role that you have. And for, you know, say if it were me that called, that said to the student, well, you know, don't make me call Mr. Chaz in here. Like that, basically what I'm saying is that you're just here to just handle a discipline. Like that's, and I feel like that is one of the more disrespectful things that you could do to another professional.
Thank you for saying that because
I very quickly
make it the other professional's issue.
Yes.
Because as I come in and I make those statements or ask those questions, I very quickly turn the power into the student. I give the power to the student. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have to worry about Mr. Chaz as long as I'm safe and you know, respectful and, you know, not causing disturbance, allowing other people to learn. Well, then I like that student loses so much respect for that adult in the room.
Right.
It's harder to get them back.
I always have called that outsourcing your discipline. Like, you know, yes, like you don't outsource your discipline because at some point in time, the kid is going to lose respect for you. And, you know, and my thing is, it's like, if you have a student in your classroom that's not responding to something you're doing, whether it be instructionally or behaviorally, then as a teacher, it is my job to figure out, you know, we have to be together the whole year. You know, I got to figure out what we can do to work together. And, you know, it's so my conversation with you should never be come in and fix this problem. My conversation with you should be, what should I be doing as the student's teacher to make sure that he's doing what he needs to do or she's doing what she needs to do and that I'm handling this appropriately. You know, and 'cause there could be something that I could have used the wrong words. You know, I could have said the thing that wasn't working and the kid didn't respond for that reason. I mean, there could be 20 reasons why that I'm not getting what I want in that moment.
And you're absolutely right. And that's my role now. I'm a behavior coach. They made it very clear to say that I'm not a consultant because
you're a resource, not a weapon.
Correct. I can come in and say, like, I'm also in 13 different districts. So you can't call me on the phone and say, oh, this is happening and expect me to just show up.
Right.
So what did you do before? How did you handle it? What's the learning? What's our reinforcement? Like, what are all these things all these questions that I ask every single time that all of a sudden they start asking themselves before they call, before they text, before they email me, so they can tell me the answers of the questions I'm already going to have. Well, I tried this. I tried this. I tried this. This didn't work. This doesn't work. So I know that they've worked through it, you know, and that's much better use of my time and resources that I can give than just showing up and sitting there idly just so someone does their worksheet.
Right.
I feel like that's like operant conditioning almost on some level. I don't know.
Well done, Doug. Well done.
I remember that psychology class, Chaz.
Yeah, yeah.
That one class.
That one class.
So, right. Really quickly though, outside of you know the school, like I had one other situation where I worked really closely with this one student. He was basically 2-on-1 in an isolated classroom, African American.
Two adults. Okay.
2-to-1. And, you know, some significant behavior issues, you know, a lot of learning issues, ACEs just through the roof, you know, a lot of trauma, you know, just so much going on for him. And it got to the point where, you know, I was pulled in. So it was almost, I would say it's a 2.5-to-1. Like I was in there almost half my time. And it got myself to the point where an administrator of the building, a center-based program, made the decision that the parent was not cooperative, we'll say. And I was the only person that was allowed to have communication with that parent.
Really?
Until further notice.
Was everybody else white except for you?
Almost.
Okay.
Almost. There's some on the response team, handle behavior, a couple paras that weren't in that classroom, but in the 2-to-1, like in his situation, yeah, I was the only, you know, I was the only African American there. And so, you know, I had to walk this kid to the bus to his mom's car every day, give him the report, tell, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I'm definitely at the time, I know I was the best person to have a conversation with that adult, other adult. At the same time, it shouldn't have been my job.
Right.
So I've heard this term lately. I took one for the team.
Mm.
It kind of sucks. It's a horrible term, but I've heard it echoed from Black people. Like, I just took one for the team on that one because I knew that, like, right now I feel like Black people are not going to be taking one for the team much longer. Right. So y'all better figure it out. Right.
Well, yeah,
like, that's what I'm saying. Like, y'all better figure it out. White people figure it out.
As Black educators, though, I feel like we don't take one for the team. I think we take one for our students.
Because
sometimes our students need that. Yes, so I could.
Go ahead. No, that's good.
I could have said F you. Yeah, I could have said, no, I'm not doing it. But I knew in the student I support, it was in the best interest for him if I would go talk to his mother.
Hey, man, that's not. I came at it from a deficit mindset. You came at it from a more positive mindset, and I appreciate that. That was really good feedback. That was cool. All right. Anybody else got anything for Chaz tonight?
Man, I enjoyed the brother. I'm sorry, Dana. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the same thing. This has been great, and I think that in a lot of cases when we look at, you know, how to, you know, make our schools equitable, I think in so many cases, we constantly ignore special education. You know, I think it's like, it's, you know, it's a constant ignoring of special education in the equity piece. And, you know, it's definitely a necessity, you know, it's something we need to consider, but there's also an intersectionality where special education is a part of that. And we just need to do a better job.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Absolutely.
All right, Chaz, you're the special guest tonight. We have a post game that you can hang out. Just don't go anywhere. Once we hit the music and you sit around, we'll talk a minute. But okay. Anything else that you want to share with the folks? Like anything that you got going on? I mean, our following is like in the millions right now. At least.
Okay.
After this episode, we might get up to like 29 people following us.
Okay, so I have a really quick, I don't want to say, story pitch for those Delaware educators that, and administrators specifically. The other soccer piece that Doug talked about. So I work. I'm a national facilitator for U.S. Soccer Foundation.
Ooh.
I'm one of the national trainers that teaches coach mentors in a program called Soccer for Success, which is an after-school free program for underprivileged areas to really, it's really giving them the coach mentor, a positive adult in their life, and really focuses on health, wellness, advocacy, mentorship, safe spaces, nutrition, but really encompasses all of that, but uses soccer as a tool or a vehicle to teach those things. And we are up to, this year is going to be really tough for us because this will be the first time we've done a national convention to train people virtually. You know, we're usually at this time, I'm going to DC for a week to train coaches from all over the country. But right now, we're doing it virtually next week. And, but our after-school program is doing some really big things. I really think you should look into it. It's called Soccer for Success through the U.S. Soccer Foundation. The amount of positive interaction we can have with kids, and we've talked about this already within sports, is incredible to make that pairing. And it goes so well in the schools. A free program. There's grant money they throw at you. It's great to give kids something to do. Awesome. And we know the pay for play system. That's there. So if you can imagine, it's really expensive to play soccer to get to a certain level, like hockey or any other thing.
You can play soccer. You just can't play soccer for real.
Until you got money. So this is this is a way to, you know, help bridge that with some of our, Black mentors that are connected in the area to kind of see some potential and get them connected with other teams to get them better training and better.
Is it based out of Harrisburg?
No, this is based out of DC. This is national. US.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm based out of Harrisburg because that's my location. But
I was just going to say, if it was Western PA, like Delaware always crushed Western PA and ODP. Just putting that out there. Sorry, bro.
Doug, my club team never. The only ODP team we lost to was Virginia. So
that is such a lie.
That is not a lie.
We are talking post game about this. Okay. All right. Yeah, Chaz, for real. No, your program is awesome. You told me about this before, but send me. We'll get the link and we'll put it in the show notes. So some way I'll get it from you later. But that's cool. That's awesome.
But the easy, honestly, to make an after school program, the easiest way, as always, is to have an advocate on the inside as an administrator saying that, yes, this is something we need to do to give our students. So that's why I throw it out there.
That's awesome.
Awesome. All right, bro. Great talking to you. Dina and Gerard, anything else before we close it out?
Nah, it's been great.
Thank you, everybody, for having me.
This has been great. Hopefully, it's just maybe part one of a part two. I can come back another time.
Absolutely.
We'll have you back next week. I'm just kidding. All right. We're going to be out. All right. We'll see you post-game. Don't go anywhere, anybody.
All right.
This is Speaking Educationally with Doug, Dina, and Gerard.
Where I'm coming from.
15 years into to education now, you know, what can I do to create this equitable space in my, you know, what?
And especially for those students that look like me and that came from my community, I wanted to be an influencer for them, like for young people.
Connect with more people whose mindset and goals.
All right, this is Speaking Educationally with Doug, Dina, and Gerard.